Hey guys, hope everybody's doing great today and hope your May is just off to a fantastic start. I know that this time of year, man, there's so much going on with graduations and transitions and for us, and I think it's probably true for most of us, we have more weddings and more marriage counseling going on this time of year as well. And then this year, Easter is kind of late, right? So we're in the middle of a bam between Easter, which is our biggest day of the year, really outside of like big Christmas days or big Palm Sunday events that we do for the town. But outside of that, Easter is number one and Mother's Day is number two, and they're kind of bam, bam. So what a perfect time for us to talk about the subject that we're going to talk about today. And that is achieving excellence without experiencing exhaustion. I'm so glad that Josh Pennington's with me. Josh, thanks for taking time, man.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, hey, I want everybody to get to know a little bit about you. God's really blessed your ministry, and I just hear such good things all the time. Tell us how long you've been in ministry.
My wife and I started in pastoral ministry 17 and a half years ago. We started a church in our hometown after finishing Bible college the first Sunday of October of 2004. My wife and I, this month, you talk about busy month, this month we celebrate, my wife and I celebrate 25 years of marriage. So that's pretty exciting.
You're just a kid, man.
I know, it's wild.
Yeah, I can't believe 37 comes. It really does. It just goes so fast. Yeah.
Yeah, so this year, you talked about May, our oldest son graduates Sunday from The Ohio State University. So
he is
our first college grad, major in finance, minor in history. So that's how our Mother's Day is going to be this year. We have four kids. Jacob and Julia are our twins. They are 22. Audrey is 21. And Alex, our youngest, is 19.
Now, I may be totally wrong, but is one of your kids a kicker? Was one of your kids a kicker, right?
Yeah, our youngest son, Alex, was a high school kicker, and they went to state his junior year, so he kicked in Hall of Fame Stadium. We're in Ohio, so he did really awesome, and he had a chance to play at the next level, and he said, Dad, I love football, but I hate school, so I don't think college kicking is going to work out for me.
Well, you know what my son Michael said to me? He played baseball, and he was playing in college and had a scholarship, and he came home and he said, Dad, I love baseball, just not as much as you. So that's when he transitioned and took on worship. But is pastoring the first job you had, or did you work in a ministry job before?
First time in ministry. We started our church 17 years ago with the help of three other couples, and it was my first ministerial assignment. And we started, as I said, in our hometown. We've been through three building projects. I'm sitting in the most current one, which is about 3.5 years old. And this is all we've ever known in terms of ministry.
Yeah. Well, man, it's just been fantastic. Tell us just a little bit about your hometown.
My hometown is a place called Newark, Ohio, and it is east of Columbus, way outside the Outer Belt. There are three sister communities, Newark, Granville, and Heath. They make up about 40 to 50,000, probably 45,000-ish in population. There's around 150,000, just under, in the entire county. So that's our hometown.
Well, I'm excited about this week and next week, too, because you and Justin Ross really do epitomize what burns in my heart for significant church, and that is that every town will have a thriving church. And it blows me away how much God calls people to the town they grew up in or to towns that are real close to where they grew up in, even though they probably had conversations with God and said, really, do you want me for sure? But, you know, really, you have so much favor in your hometown. I know Jesus almost got thrown off the cliff, so it's not all easy, but it just amazes me how much God calls people to their hometown. We're going to jump right into it, Josh, but first let me just do this. I want to welcome some of our recent members to Significant Church, Pastor Justin Banks from Expedition Church, Cannon City, Colorado, Pastor Emmanuel Canedo from Mazatlan, Mexico. Pastor George Dillard from Peachtree City Christian Church in Peachtree City, California. Pastor Thomas Fortner from First Baptist Church in Mill Creek, Oklahoma, Pastor Steve Frost from Shawnee Baptist Church in Louisville, Kentucky, Pastor Neil Henderson, Forest Park Community Church, Baltimore, Maryland, Pastor Aaron Hoag, Nevada Church of God in Sharpsville, Indiana, Pastor Daryl Jones, God's Word in Action Church, Chicago, Indiana, Pastor Ronnie Morales, Faith Community Church, Spring, Maryland, Pastor Andy Parks, Cross Point Church in Paola, Kansas, Pastor Barb Rigdon, The Well of Providence in Providence, Kentucky, Pastor Richard Rodriguez, Restoration Alliance Church, El Paso, Texas, Pastor Tim Stanton, Berean Baptist Church, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Pastor Johnny Valenzuela from RM Ministries in Dumas, Texas, and Pastor Mike Wilson from New Life, a church in Gillette, Wyoming. So Josh, let's get into this because you're really going to help us do a few things. And I really loved your outline, by the way.
Thank you.
But you're going to help us embrace exhaustion, really. You're going to just kind of tell us we're wired for it. God kind of made us that way. And then you're going to help us understand how it gets unhealthy. And then you're going to help us develop a checklist so that accomplishment, exhaustion, it all pretty much becomes a good thing, not a negative thing in our life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, excellence and exhaustion, they go together. There really isn't any separating them. And now, obviously, exhaustion can become very unhealthy. But I think excellence and exhaustion for me, they go with leadership. So it's like this ebb and flow and finding the rhythm. I prefer the word rhythm to balance. There are probably better people to talk about balance than me, but rhythm is something that makes more sense. I've never been able to equally balance excellence and exhaustion, for example. It's kind of more of a rhythm for me. And I wanted to identify three enemies in leadership that are three kinds of exhaustion: fog, fatigue, and flirtation. Fog to me is the mind when you're just not clear. Fatigue is that emotional component that exhaustion plays. And they build because then when I'm fuzzy in my mind and I'm fatigued in my soul, it causes me to flirt with things that I shouldn't be flirting with, like questions of, am I really cut out for this? Do I really belong here? Wouldn't someone else do this so much better than I would? And for me, the thing that cuts through the fog is clarity. And that's always been the thing that I go to when I'm exhausted. And how do I get back to that spirit of excellence is to go back to the beginning and refocus and get a better sense of clarity in my personal life and my ministerial life, or maybe in a business venture or whatever the case may be for the season and time that a person might be in.
Yeah, I think that really does kind of from a, I mean, you did a really good job of alliteration there, right? You got your things that caused us to flirt with quitting and the things that we quit. But I think it's not just kind of clear and concise, but I think it's pretty complete too. That when you think about temptations in the Bible, what does the Bible say about fog? It says where you have confusion, you end up with every evil work. So yeah. When we're in a fog, we better say, no, I'm not going to make any decisions right now because I'm in a fog. I don't need to make a decision. And then when you think about fatigue, I mean, the enemy thought he could even get Jesus when he was fatigued, right? So yeah. If, you know, I try hard, but I'm a long way from Jesus. So when I'm in fog, when I'm fatigued, I better be really careful. And when you've been at it as long as I have, I've been pastoring this church, it'll be 33 years this year.
Wow.
And you're not going to go that long without having some heartbreaking stories of people that you love who weren't able to finish well. And I agree with you that for every one of those I know, it didn't start with flirting. It started with the other things. It started with fog. It started with fatigue. And then they started flirting with things. And I think we're made to do this. I mean, I came in the other day, and Josh, I think, have you been to my sanctuary yet? Have
no.
You been here? Okay, so it's like a stadium, you know, it's like 2,200 seats. I just want to run the stadium steps, you know. I'll come in, I want to run. And then about halfway up, I am 62 years old. This is an Orioles baseball stadium anymore. But when I work out, I like to be tired, you know? And there's that story of the geese and how they fly, that they fly in that V formation because researchers say they go 70% further flying in that V formation. But, you know, you have to wonder why the lead goose, who takes twice the air, stays up there so much. And he does come back a little bit, I'm told. And when he gets tired, the other geese will help him. But for the most part, he takes twice the air. And the other, the honking, I'm told, is really to encourage the head goose. And if it's in you, it's just in you, right? And
yeah.
And you have to manage it. You can't get rid of it.
Yeah, first I want to say 62 never looked so good. So, like, I'm looking forward to 62 if that's what it looks like.
Yeah,
I want to say that. But, you know, kind of a story, an example of this for me on the fatigue part and how it, all these things led to flirtation. What we do, let's say, like, on the weekend, if we're the main communicator, our job isn't so much physical, but it's more mental, emotional, and spiritual. And what I found was that there was this mismatch of energy that I was dealing with every weekend. So I would come home, and on the inside I was tired, but on the outside I wasn't. And I would be up late because I wasn't physically tired, but I was mentally tired. And so I would get into this flirtation thing. I wonder what the offering was. I wonder if this year's attendance compared to last year's attendance in that. And so my mind would go to all these places that didn't need to go because I was not tired outside, but I was tired inside. And so I had to make kind of an adjustment and do things physically so that my internal energy and fatigue matched my outside fatigue so that I could actually rest in every component. That's what I was thinking of when you were talking about you were walking those stairs, that those mismatched energies can sometimes sneak up on us and really cause us trouble, and we really can't figure out why.
Yeah, you know, I was talking recently to somebody who worked with Schwab, Charles Schwab, and they give their employees a month after 5 years of service. They give them a whole month off. I thought that's a really good idea. That's something I want to think about incorporating in the future of our church. But it's not the answer. I mean, the truth is, there, if you don't master these smaller answers, that big answer isn't going to be what you need. And what you said there was really true. Do you use a Fitbit or any kind of anything to gauge your sleep? Yeah, I do.
No.
I do every night. And
you do.
It's amazing how the little things, like when I drink caffeine, when I don't, what you just mentioned right there, I come home and when we had little kids, I don't even think I napped on Sundays. But now I do. I just look forward to it. You know, it's a great feeling after Sunday morning, and you just go and you just celebrate it a little bit. Tamara and I enjoy a meal together. Then I actually do some work. I work out. I do some physical stuff. And then we usually spend Sunday nights with family, whether it's all the family in or whether we just go out with, you know, some of our family. But it really is true what you said. And you kind of have to find your rhythm.
Yeah. Back to the fog, fatigue, and flirtation for me, that if I have clarity, the fog lifts, the fatigue is manageable, and the flirtations really are greatly reduced, and they come at a minimum. And I love what Ephesians says about this idea of clarity. If I can, I want to read Ephesians 1:17. It says this, Paul says this, we're all really familiar. I keep asking that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the glorious Father, may give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation so you may know him better. I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people. And for me, one of the paths forward to clarity is I look at this verse and I see called as a past tense verb. And I'd made a mistake for a long time that when I was exhausted, I would talk to my team and myself about the future. Here's what we're going to do. I just, as a natural vision caster, like, the way to get through this with excellence is just talk about what's next, talk about what's next, talk about what's next. And that didn't really work. And so I shifted. When I saw that word, I shifted. And I, instead of talking about the future, when I'm exhausted, to get back to a spirit of excellence, I talk about the past.
Oh, that's
We've
good.
Come a long way
that's
in
really
God.
Good.
Let's talk
really
about
good.
That.
Yeah, a you lot know? Of us, and I'm going to tell you that if There's some sins I'm not even tempted to commit. I won't list what they are. But not celebrating as much as I should is something that when I look back over the years, I just want to slap myself at times, you know, because I think we fight that a lot, what you're talking about. Yeah.
And especially if it's my natural bent to be futuristic and forecasting and see, lead, to be out front. But that really wears me down and exhausts me and exhausts others. And so I guess maybe one practical thing that I would offer for everyone that's watching the webinar, make a list of 5 to 10 milestones, examples of God's faithfulness.
Good.
And don't even stop at 10. Just like take 10 or 15 minutes when we finish here or when you've felt exhausted, just start writing down all of those wins, all of the things you can think of from all the way back in the beginning to today. And you'll find that that exhaustion fades, the spirit of excellence will rise up, and you'll just have so much clarity and realize, whoa, God has really been good to us, and it just lifts the fog for me.
Yeah. You know, I love the Strength Finder thing. Of all the tests that we've used, I love Strength Finder. And my top 5 strengths are achieving, focus, competition, an arranger, like putting the team together. And at the end of the day, it's like, oh my goodness. So God said for sure when he made me, it's not good for him to dwell alone. I got to make a helper suitable for him. So my wife's are all relational, empathy, positivity. She's a developer, so she's got that leadership thing inside of her. But I think that's where sometimes what God made us to do, if our prayer life goes, we're in trouble. I mean, the first thing, Justin and I are going to talk about our care systems next week, Justin Ross. And with Moses, the first thing God told him was, be my representative before the people and bring their causes to me. And what keeps me healthier than almost anything else as a pastor in my soul is not being too busy to pray, and specifically not being too busy to pray for the causes in the hearts of my people that God wants to fulfill. He wants this place to be a house of answered prayer for people. So, I mean, you're right that when we get into that leadership mode, we can feel the anointing wane when we're driving too much, and we need to pay attention to that. You have a ton of great checklists, though, and I couldn't wait to go through this outline today.
Yeah. So I have some tools that I use that help bring clarity to me. And the first are 5 questions that I ask under the heading of focus. And when I say focus, I mean direction, not destination. The difference is direction is today I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to drive east. That's the direction. The destination might be Pittsburgh. It might be Philly. It might be Newark, New Jersey. It might be, if I go far enough, New York City. But the general direction is east. And for me, knowing general direction brings me focus. And I do that with 5 questions under what I call, and what's called, a mentor passed this concept on to me. It's called the North Star. The first one is the God question. And all this is meant to be really quick, like not overthinking, not a long time, 2 minutes or less on the God question in eternity. I just write down and remind myself what happens after I die. It might seem morbid, but it brings clarity. Like, as people of God, after we die, we're present with the Lord.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
All of this striving and all of this exhaustion ends, right? Like, so, and each person could have their own specific, what happens after we die? Second is a purpose question. Why? Why am I here? The third is a dream question, which answers the what. What difference do I hope to make in this life? The fourth is my life work question, which is how. And what do I see myself doing for a lifetime? The last question is a legacy question, which is, what do you want to be known for 100 years after you die?
That's good.
2 minutes or less, just jot them down. And then at the end of it, I'm a big fan of red light, yellow light, green light, or 1 through 10. So at the end of it, I'll say, now, Josh, how clear is my lifelong focus? 1 to 10. 1 through 5 is red light. 6 and 7 is a yellow. 8, 9, and 10 is green. And every time I do this, it bumps up. So I'll start in the red. You know, my lifelong focus, because I'm exhausted, I'm in the fog, I'm dealing with the fatigue, I'm flirting with other careers and vocations, it's in the red. But every time I do this, it brings me back to that, what my mentor called the North Star.
Yeah, I'm gonna repeat those just because guys may want to type these in their phone.
Yeah.
They're so good. So you start with God and eternity, and you give yourself a couple minutes on each one, and you just remember, hey, we're all mortal. Somebody said, if you retire, and somebody said, not if I retire, I'll either retire, you know, and hand the church over, or I'll retire out of here, one of the two. And so we're all mortal. And then purpose, why? 2 minutes or less, why am I here? And then 3, what? The dream, what difference do I hope to make? Life work, what do you see yourself doing the rest of your life? And legacy. Significant church to me is about legacy. Like, I don't know, outside of the Apostle Paul and that first generation, I don't know many generations of ministers that left a legacy better than John Wesley and those guys. And I don't think any of them could have done it together, alone. You know, I think it was the collaboration of being a band together that 200 years later, they were still starting a church somewhere in the world. Now, eventually, I've read a lot of books on that movement, and eventually there were things that started deteriorating that we all have to watch ourselves. But that whole thing of legacy, man, we only get one shot at this. We want to do it big.
Yeah. I want to say one thing about those questions too. It's really up to the individual whether that's something that they share with others or not. And oftentimes there are things that I write down that I don't share with anyone, not even my wife. And there are other things that I do. It just depends on like how fatigued am I, how exhausted am I? And I look at those and I might be a little worried about my answer a little bit sometimes. Like, I guess I just want to remind people that are listening in that, like, this is primarily for you and God, and nobody else really needs to see it necessarily. And that just takes the pressure off me to just be honest in this, I guess, journaling, if you want to call it that, or whatever it is.
So let me ask you this. Do you sense that you have less fog, less fatigue, and that you flirt less with things that you really didn't even want to come to your mind? Are you doing that a lot less though when you started the process?
A lot less.
Okay. So tell me folks, before and after. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So at other times, you know, here again, I primarily have the responsibility for preaching and teaching. And I think it was Spurgeon who said this, a mist in the pulpit is a fog in the pew.
Yeah. Oh.
And I know that for people that I need to be clear. I have to operate in clarity. But man, that fog and the fatigue, it makes me feel stuck. And I lived a lot of the first decade or so feeling like I'm stuck. I can't get any traction. I can't get any forward motion. I remember one of the first things that helped me get unstuck was that little black binder that I got from Significant Church with the DVDs and the notes.
Yeah, on how to build a contagious environment. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You all articulated what was in my heart, and it got me unstuck. Clarity came, and energy came, and focus came. The thing that I realized was that I thought I was an undisciplined person, but I really came to realize I was an unfocused person.
That's good.
And that when focus comes, discipline is attached to focus for me. And so these tools were just fog clearing. But I lived when we did the building project, fog. I didn't know what to do next. I didn't know how to raise the money. I didn't know how to interact with an architect. I didn't know any of that stuff. And I would be willing to pay almost any amount to get unstuck because I hate being stuck.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why it's so important that we do life together, because the scripture says, you who are strong should bear with the failings of the weak. Sometimes I'm weak, sometimes I'm strong. But I mean, our building, I really sit in the grace of John Osteen, Larry Stockstill, and Mark Harrell. That, you know, without those three guys, I wouldn't have had the ability to build something, first of all, here in the Holy Spirit at a time that was right. I mean, the way steel and China and everything emerged, someone tried to build this building, and it was twice the price just a few years later, you know. And then just so much about the details of it that Mark Harrell and Larry Stockstill and my father-in-law helped me with. So it really can be daunting. I mean, some days you got to go home and remember, hey, I'm not Moses. I'm not lifting up a rod at the Red Sea today, you know. But God gets us through.
He does. And for me, those relationships are valuable, necessary. But this tool for me became something, because sometimes when I get in the fog, I withdraw from people. I know that's bad. I know that's not good. But this tool brings me back to that North Star, to where I kind of have something that is predictable. One person said this: confidence is the byproduct of predictability. And when I could predictably walk through a process that could just bring one bit of fuzziness clear, that gave me such confidence.
Yeah, that's good.
And that's where the journey kind of was. It's like, I can't find my way through this. I don't know what I'm doing. But we shouldn't underestimate the power of just one thing getting clearer in our lives. Just one. Not everything, but just one thing where you're like, I'm stuck. I don't know what to do here. I can't see this. And these questions always at least bring one point of clarity for me.
How often do you ask those questions?
Every time I'm stuck. at least I go over them at least once a month, but as needed, I always have them. If there's an area of personal frustration, I'll whip them out, and I keep some answers that I've given more thought to, that then I'll reread what I've already written.
Yeah,
and see yeah, that is right. Or I adjust it, or, you know, make progress in my thinking. But going back to what I had written the month before or the week before and just rereading that, I'm like, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
That's what my legacy is.
Well, Josh, if you want to know how important this is, I can think, just as I was preparing for today and I was praying about this webinar, I thought of 5 mega church pastor sons who were all very talented people, who all took over their father's church. One of them got addicted to alcohol. I mean, things didn't go good for any one of these 5. And nobody's bad here. We're all just learning. And I thought about where before Jesus started into ministry, do you remember what happened? A cloud opened up, a voice came from heaven, and God said, "This is my beloved son, in whom I'm well pleased. Listen to him." And I just thought about how, for my 2 sons, there's 3 things I want them to know. Number one, I want them to know I'm well pleased with the heart they live with, because not every day is going to be easy, but I'm well pleased with the heart that you're living with. Number two, I want them to know they're loved. And I think sometimes, especially when you're in the ministry and everybody's not loving you every day. I mean, some days you feel like that mama dog that has all these people coming for food, you know, and you're wondering if you have enough sources to feed them all. And so you got to know you're loved. You've got to know that God's well pleased with your heart. Then I think the third thing is you have to know that what you're going to say, that people need to hear it. And I think we don't think enough about that as pastors sometimes. I wasn't raised, I'm a first generation, fully devoted Christ follower. So I grew up in a good moral Catholic family that gave me a culture of discipline I'll be eternally grateful for. But I didn't know. I had no clue how to walk with God in my heart until I came to him at 17. So I think that as we're doing this, when you're asking those questions, you're feeling the pleasure of the Father. You're feeling the love of the Father. you're feeling the significance of what you do. And that just tends to clear the fog, get rid of the fatigue, and now you're not flirting with the same kind of stuff.
Exactly. You said something a moment ago, and it slipped past me, and it had to do with flirtation, and it was a different kind of word, but maybe it will come back to me. But those are the tools I use for lifelong focus. And then I have a my want to list. Some people might call it a bucket list, but I don't want to call it a bucket list because a bucket list is more of like things you check off before you die. And I don't mean it that way. There are five things here again that I do to help give me direction and focus. And I'll write these out and I'll categorize them. I have a grid where I just list them out. One, what do I want to be? I want to be a good representation of Jesus as a Christian, as a Christ follower.
Good.
I want to be a good husband. I want to be a good father. I want to be a good pastor and leader. Like, this is what I want to be. And whatever I want to be, that's what I write down. The second thing is, what do I want to do? And I don't hyper-spiritualize this. One of the things that I wrote, I just had back surgery about 6 weeks ago. And one of the things I want to do is I want to play more golf. So I wrote that down.
Yeah, yeah.
What do I want to have? And I don't mean this as like possessions, but joy, peace, unity, strength, clarity. Who do I want to help? Who are the kinds of people that I feel like I speak their language? You know, we're in a rural community. Many of our community, a large part of our community is blue collar, hardworking, soul to the earth Americans. They clock in, they clock out, they're getting dirty on the job, they're farmers, they're teachers, they're nurses. Who do I want to help? And I make a list of those things. And the last thing is, what do I want to leave? I want to leave a spirit of excellence. I want to leave a spirit of generosity. And I just take time to write all those things down, because for me, Pastor Jim, nothing clarifies like measurability. And we as pastors live in a very non-measurable world. How do you measure spiritual growth?
Yeah.
Well, how do you know as a pastor if you're winning?
Well, it's like Ukraine right now, too. You know, I have a pastor friend whose daughter actually went and got counseling, and she said, I know I'm not feeling as compassionate towards the people of Ukraine as I should. And I know that I should be more engaged in helping the people of Ukraine. So literally, she went to counseling, which I thought was huge and awesome. But when you're a pastor, there's so many things that seem more important than the things you're talking about, you know? And that's where I think we get in trouble, because you can have the best of intentions with these things, but then all of a sudden you're confronted with something right before your face that you think, well, this has to be a higher priority. And slowly your energy just starts being depleted. Do you do this with your wife, or do you guys do it together?
We do it separately. And then we have, when we go away on trips, which we do as often as we can, we talk about these things together. We're in our 40s, and we're early empty nesters. So the kids are almost all off of the payroll, and we're still really young. Like, so we had four kids by 24. I was 43 when our youngest son graduated from high school.
Yeah, that's young.
So,
I was 52, maybe. Yeah.
So we're like just like maybe 12 months into really catching our own breath from raising kids. And now we're having these conversations. It's actually interesting that as a couple, the fog, the fatigue, and the flirtation are things that we have to manage as well together. Like, we're asking questions like, okay, what does ministry look like now together that she has time that isn't needed to be managing kids?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, we were more, that was our rhythm. So she and I are, to be perfectly candid, we're in a very deep fog because we're transitioning into doing ministry together. We've never gone this way before. So we're asking these questions of ourselves.
Well, Tamara really, Tamara was a first grade teacher whenever we got married. And so she wanted to homeschool her kids. And quite frankly, we took a church with 80 families, you know, a little less than 200 people, that had a Christian school. I joked that the first year they had two graduates, one was salutatorian, one valedictorian. You know, it was just really small. But when that school was developing, she wanted to homeschool our kids, which was great for me because we went to three weekend services fairly quick. And so it gave me time with them because, I couldn't be with them on the weekends. And so anyway, there was a season where Tamara would, welcome guests and do things like that. But I couldn't count on her for a whole lot more than that because she had four kids at home. But I can tell you, whenever the empty nest season came, weeping endured for a night, but joy came in the morning. It was like, man, we actually have time to date. We have definitely more money than we had the first time we were dating, So it's been a great phase. We're loving this phase. I mean, we're totally, and now, we have grandkids, which really start. That's a pretty awesome experience whenever that happens. But Tamara and I will get away after the last Sunday in May. That's when all the graduations here, all of our schools in the region graduate. And so we'll get away, and we do it every year. And it's one of the best things we do. And we do plan individually, but we do it in the same room. So we're, talking back and forth, and then we're talking over stuff at night. We usually do it somewhere we really love going to together. It just makes it a lot of fun. But I don't know how they do it if they don't do that. I really don't, with how complex a pastor's life is.
And Angie is wonderful at reminding me that doing these things together matters. I'm a very independent person. I can sit in a room and think and write and do things all by myself. But she's the one that's always saying, hey, we're a team. Let's do this together. Let's talk about this. And my kind of personality is driver, decisive, we've talked enough. Let's go do it. And she's more inviting of a conversation. And that's healthy for us as a couple, because she'll see things that I don't see and vice versa.
Yeah, for sure. Especially when it comes to unity. I mean, women bond environments, and guys like you, guys like me, if we're not careful, we start conquering too much. And that's, and people love it whenever we're doing it together and for all the right reasons. They sure like the gift. Well, you have how many of these things on your checklist?
So the main five are on the North Star. There's the five that you went over. Then direction are the want to list. And then less sporadically, I will do an aging question. So that's three. A motivation question, that's four. A comfort question, that's five. And a fulfillment question, that's six. Aging is 1 to 10. How settled am I in this phase of life? 20s is a certain phase. 30s is another phase. 40s, I'm learning, is a different. I haven't yet ventured into 50s, 60s, 70s and up, and I'm watching those ahead of me to see that. And I know this could be subjective, but I think it's worth doing the work of how happy or settled are you in this phase of life? And just wrestling with whatever that answer is. And I think that sometimes could be the cause of the fog and the fatigue. There's just something about this phase of life that you're just not settled in.
Yeah, I forget what comedian said this, but he said life's like a roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end, the quicker it seems like it's going. Yeah. And that's really true. Tamara and I talked the other day because we're not perfect people and we for sure could redo things. But in terms of big term regrets, we don't have any. And that's a good feeling. I mean, it's not even healthy to be such a perfectionist that you got a lot of negative baggage you carry around with you. But I like what you said, because somebody told me this early in the ministry and I never forgot it, that every 10 years it's like a chip you're playing in a poker game. So it probably wasn't a Christian, I don't know if it, who told me that, but it really is. So in my 20s, I was well aware I was playing a chip. In my 30s, I knew I was playing a chip. And there were times when, you know, opportunities to travel and do things would come. And I would think, you know, when I'm all done, whether I helped my kids have a good Little League experience and what, or whether I, that's going to matter more to me than a little bit more money or a little bit of travel. And so I think it is important, again, that you get away so you're not just, you know, to use your illustration, you meant to go to Pittsburgh, which is where I'm from, so I'm going to choose Pittsburgh as the best destination, okay? But you ended up in, and I'll leave that alone, you know?
Okay.
You want to end up where you really set out to go.
Yeah. And each of those phases of life and understanding that, it's a little tool also that I use to help clear the fog in leading others, specifically like in message prep. I'll come in this room and I'll literally sit in different chairs and I'll think about different people in different phases of life.
Yeah.
Think about the 20-year-old who is trying to decide whether they continue college or whether they go into the workforce. I'll think about the 30-year-old who is going through a painful divorce. I'll think about the 60-year-old that's getting ready to retire and celebrate and ask, how will this land with each of those different phases? And it's a reminder to me that I'm in a phase. And I've adopted this idea on this aging question of, I want to be in their shoes, not in their face. And that helps me to age well. It helps me to be happy and settled.
That's a great phrase. Be in their shoes, not in their face. That's really
good. Yeah. Because I've been in some of their shoes. And yeah. I'm going to be in the rest of their shoes sooner rather than later.
And if you think about it, it's not that hard to start understanding how people feel. I've watched people, like, even they'll be with people who are in that last decade. And I can tell you, I've pastored some people for a long time. And I think you tend to pastor maybe people 20 years older than you and maybe people 20 years younger than you. And then you got to work even harder, right? So I've got people now that, you know, this last 10 years, I buried some of my really good church members. And one of the most meaningful things for me is coming in and honoring their memory in front of all of their family and all of their friends. I mean, I consider it such an honor to do that. But you do see their habits changing. And who they were, it's not that that doesn't matter, because not every 80-year-old's in church every Sunday, you know. But you just see those things matter. And if you're unaware of those things as you're interacting with them, then that's not very loving, right?
Yeah. In their shoes, not in their face, it helps me clear the fog because it gets me out of the me-centered focus.
Yeah.
Which some of these things are me-centered, and that's okay for a time. But then it helps me clear the fog to realize, oh, wait a minute. That woman in her 50s just became a widow. And it clears my fog to say, you know what? Whether they filled out that expense report should be brought into a little bit of check, you know, like, and prioritized it. Not that production isn't important and performance isn't important, but I get so stuck in the weeds of that, that I really want to be pursuing God's presence more than I pursue any production.
Yeah.
Whether it's lights, camera, action, or just producing something for the kingdom, like, I want his presence. And that clears the fog for me.
Yeah, and sometimes if you're like I just tend to be responsible. It's one of my strength finders, so I'm just responsible. If you ask me to do something, I'm going to do it or I'm going to feel bad, you know. And I think sometimes those things will drive us, and we just need God's presence to balance it all out to keep us all in the right kind of focus. Yeah. So I'm going to go back over this. I love that North Star thing that you talked about, but focus. And you talk about direction, not destination, which I think is so healthy. I mean, Philip, whenever he was speaking in Samaria, had great signs and wonders, great crowds. And God told him, now leave that here. I'm going to have some other people take that. And you go over to this chariot that's going south on the desert road. And he went and spoke with a man who was, I think, treasurer over Ethiopia. And in just one encounter, that man went back and started a great church planting movement in Ethiopia. So he could have thought, man, this is awesome speaking to crowds. But he goes and speaks to one man and maybe changes the world more in that one encounter than everything else that he ever did. So that's where we just have to keep our hearts right. I go, after we do our anniversary Sunday, I go to the mission field every year. And I sit with our 30 missionaries that we're the sole support of. I've known them for years. Most of them have been beaten for the gospel to establish a church planting movement where they're at. They've all been highly persecuted. It's against the law to openly preach the gospel where they're at. And I just go spend time with them and I pray. And you talk about your North Star. That really helps my North Star stay where it needs to be. And then hanging out with guys like you that we're going to see that everybody's hometown gets loved in our lifetime. I mean, that does a lot for my North Star. So focus, direction, which is, again, who do I want to be? What do I want to do? What do I want to have? Who do I want to help? What do I want to leave? And it really is sad when you see somebody, and I've sat with people who deep in their heart, those were all right. But the fog and the fatigue and the flirting caused them to make a decision that people don't even know what a good person they were. You know,
yeah.
It's really sad when that happens. So, and then aging. So we got the three of them. What's your fourth? What's your next one? Motivation.
And it's a simple question. And how clearly do I understand what drives me in life? You know, why am I doing it? What really is the driving force? Fog settles in when the driving force is ego and self. And I have to tell you that one of the things the last 2 years has highlighted for me was how big my ego is and was driving me and motivating me. And ego is a bad driving force in a leader's life. It's really bad.
Yeah.
And it just was fog, made things confusing for me, made me additionally tired and unnecessarily tired.
Yeah. Yeah, there's probably not many people wired like you who haven't fought that fight. But like all things that you want to overcome, you know, the Bible tells us to kill certain things. Like it doesn't tell you to set them aside or, you know, to quit doing it a little bit, but you got to kill it. And ego is one of the things you got to just stick a knife through it. Just
I have a sign in multiple places that are prominent for me to see, and it says ego is the enemy. That's so like good. I've always got it in the science, you know, like ego is the enemy, because I need that reminder. Now other people may need a different reminder, but that's mine. And that's just my example of am I being motivated by the right things? And that North Star reminds me of that. Comfort is the next one, because I know we're going to run out of time, but how comfortable is your current fit in life? As I've aged and slowly and well, you know, I think it's important to regularly ask, maybe twice a year, maybe once a year, depending on the stage of a person. How comfortable are you in your fit in life? And the low hanging fruit for me is the mom whose kids are now all out of the house and they're fighting for, okay, and they were the primary caregiver, maybe they were the stay-at-home mom. I've seen this in our community. The kids don't need their leadership and management anymore, and now they're saying, where do I fit? Where do I fit now? And that's a challenging transition.
You know, there's more than one pastor's wife that I've spoken with just as I've traveled, and a lot of times, you know, just a friend's wife. You know, you're out speaking, and a lot of them, I think, made bad choices in their early life, especially if they came from a broken family and they wouldn't have all the confidence they wish they had as a mother, maybe, you know. Sometimes they would almost just like take the call of God and say, that's for someday way down the road. I wouldn't encourage anybody to do that. I mean, even if you're, man, talk to your pastor and say, hey, if I meet the standards of excellence and if I'm in worship, can I sing once a month? If I'm an exemplary member and if I'm doing this, but to just go all or nothing, I think is a mistake sometimes, you know?
Yeah. That fit in life has been, it's an interesting question too, with if you're dealing with staffing, how do you feel like your fit is right now within the organization? Do you feel like, you know, rank your fit 1 to 10? Are we red, yellow, or green? And then consider making a transitionary move based on how they feel they fit. And maybe it's a staff member that you're wondering about their fit. Ask them how they feel, because they might be feeling the same thing and might actually be relieved to know that they can have a different fit. I mean, there are so many different applications for me of this question. The sky's the limit just based on each individual's situation, creativity, and need.
Yeah, for sure. And some people are called to your church for a long time, like you are. Not really a ton of them, though. You know, some of them are, and some key ones especially who are going to help you build the culture for long term. But the goal is to reproduce the culture. And some people are called to, and some people are called through. And they're all family in the end, you know, just called to different places. So I couldn't agree more with that. Then your last one is fulfillment, right?
Yeah. Fulfillment. And how fulfilling is your current position? Now, I wish I had different language, and there's a lot more that should be said, but too many times the fog comes because we confuse our current position with our calling. Callings don't change, but roles and positions might. And when your identity and fulfillment is wrapped up in a position, and that position changes, that's really hurtful. You lose the spirit of excellence, exhaustion sets in. And so I just ask myself, and I make sure to divorce myself from my current role and position and say, how fulfilled am I? I think that protects me. It protects my wife, it protects my family, it protects this church, that I don't have a golden ticket, and that there will be a season where I'm not the leader here. And I need to say, am I fulfilled? And is that a me issue? Is that a change? What's going on?
Yeah. You know, I think I've never said this before, but when I do my life planning, my number one goal is I want to be a friend of God. When you look in the book of James, it talks about how Abraham, I mean, he did everything we have to do. He was weak in faith. He wavered in his faith. His heart had to be won over to God, and then he had to walk right for God to bless him. But when James talks about it, he talks about how our faith can be dead, our faith can be devilish, or our faith can be dynamic. And he talked about Abraham as a dynamic example of faith. And it says in the end, he was a friend of God. And I read that one day and I thought, that's what I want to be. And I think that when we keep that strong, it's the thing that helps me the most with the fog and the fatigue and everything else. Because if God is truly my friend, what will I not do for a friend? I mean, what will I not do? What will I not say to him? And I think back when I worked for my father-in-law, a lot of people don't know this, but if I wouldn't have had a word from God to go on, I could have made a real mistake. And I remember one day I was just praying, and the Lord spoke as clearly to me as I could have possibly been spoken to. You know, one of those, you don't have many of those, just real crystal clear. And he said, if you don't go do what I'm calling you to do, because I love my father-in-law, I love serving him. He said, if you don't do what I'm calling you to do, your sons are never going to know who you are. I thought, whoa. It was just one of those moments where the fog lifted, the fatigue lifted, and God was a friend. And now, I mean, I couldn't imagine being more fulfilled. I'm probably not in the last assignment God has for my life, but I mean, it sure has been an incredible ride. And Tamara and I watch Blue Bloods. We get into different series together, and the Blue Bloods, where Tom Selleck plays that New York police commissioner. I think most people know the thing, but he'd be talking to the mayor and he'd say one phrase all the time. He'd say, I serve at your pleasure, mayor. They might be arguing, they might be doing whatever, but he always remembered that he served at the pleasure of the mayor. And that'll lift the fog too. I serve at your pleasure, Jesus. So whatever pleases you, that's what it's all about. Well, Josh, I'm going to have you pray for everybody in just a second, if that's all right. But any books you're reading that you want to suggest to guys? Any television series you and Angie are watching?
So television series, not so much TV right now.
Any movie that you've seen?
No, I haven't been to the movie theater in probably 2.5 years. I've watched stuff on Netflix, but nothing I probably like, but won't recommend.
My son Jeffrey said he watches more trailers than he does movies. He said there's so many bad movies.
Book-wise, I have a book that I've been reading called Undistracted. I think that's an Undistracted by Bob Goff. I think it's his newest one. A book called The Spider and the Spirit. Is that the name of it? Wait, I might have got that wrong.
Starfish
and the Spirit.
Yeah, it's a good book.
They did one called The Starfish and the Spider, which is an incredible book. And then they just came out with a different one called The Starfish and the Spirit. So that's more about, I think, I'll let the people judge that for themselves. But that is something that I've been looking at. And a book called Decade by Decade by Bob Beale has been very interesting to me as well.
Yeah, that's good. Well, man, guys, it's been great being together. And just want to let you know, Justin Ross will be on with us next week. Just he and Mindy are doing such a fantastic job. I mean, it's one of your good friends, right, Josh?
So yeah, they're our neighbors.
Yeah, tell them a little bit about Justin.
Justin is, he actually invited me to be on his board at the beginning of the church. And I don't know two younger, well, they're aging, but I still say they're younger because they're younger than me. Two younger people with a better heart, younger pastors with a better heart than I have come across. They're great people. They're dear friends. We would do anything for them.
Yeah, they're incredible people. I remember when he was in the business world and he came to a significant church conference in Dallas and God started dealing with his heart. And now it's just an amazing church, not in his hometown, but in the region of his hometown, if I'm remembering right. But anyway, we'll look forward to that in 2 weeks. But Josh, go ahead and say a final word and pray for everybody, all right?
Sure. Father in heaven, we thank you so much for this time. It's something that we will never be able to get back. It's unique and precious to us, this time that we have. So thank you for investing in us. Thank you for helping us see clearly and understand. Lord, I pray for everyone watching or listening. Your word says that you will refresh those who refresh others. So Father, thank you for all of the people who are pouring into the lives of other people and let them be refreshed. And I pray, just like we read in the beginning, that the eyes of each individual's understanding would be enlightened and they would know what is the hope of their calling. And so, Father, we just thank you for clarity. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Well, man, thank you for taking this time. And that was top shelf. That was great stuff today.
Wish you guys lived
closer. We could just have dinner together or something, you know.
Golf? Do you golf? We could golf?
Well, you know what? I didn't because I really was involved in my kids' baseball and basketball when they were young. So it was just something I didn't do, but I'm now doing it. And so I said to a guy who's like my father, because my dad passed away in the church, I said, you know any golf pros? I need some help getting started. He said, he sits two rows behind you every Sunday morning. So I got a guy helping me out. So I guess the answer to the question, do I golf, is maybe.
Okay. Well, maybe when Web 3.0 or whatever web version we're on escalates, we could have dinner in the metaverse.
Oh, that would be funny. Yeah, that'd be good. Oh, man. Well, again, thank you so much.
And thank you.
And guys, we'll look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.